Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm Todd Zwillick. I'm here with Daljeet Dhaliwal. John Hockenberry is away, but Justice David Souter, it's been widely reported, has told the White House that he will retire from the Supreme Court at the end of the court's term this June. Souter's retirement, of course, gives President Obama his very first pick for the High Court, and that is a great big deal in Washington, D.C. and throughout the country. We're joined now by Adam Liptak, the Supreme Court correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Adam, is it a surprise to you that Souter was the first to go from this court?
It was, if someone was going to go, it was likely to be Souter. There were a couple justices who are older who have had some health issues, but Souter was widely known to be itching to get out of Washington. He doesn't like the town.
Right.
He does like his home in New Hampshire. And in some ways, he didn't seem to like the work of the court. He said not too long ago that when the court's term starts in October, he undergoes an intellectual lobotomy. He has to read briefs. He likes to read books. And the truth is that the work of the court is hard, and it's a grind, and he took it seriously, and he worked awfully hard. But he didn't love it, and he also didn't love official Washington or even probably the power and status that came with being on the court.
He prefers his small cabin up there in the woods of New Hampshire,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Souter might be one out of the nine on the court that was the least known, or among the least known. What is he known for on the court? What role did he play, would you say?
Well, he was certainly a member of the court's liberal wing. He was also, judging from his questioning on the bench, a very smart and serious old-school judge who looked at each case one at a time, didn't come to it with a particular ideological cast, although in the end his votes tended to go on the liberal side. And he asked especially penetrating questions and was perhaps the only justice on the court who would routinely, get some piece of information from a judge, from an advocate, that might change the direction he was going in. He was the only guy who would say, oh, I see, I stand corrected.
Who would actually acknowledge that somebody could change his thinking on something.
Exactly. So he wasn't scoring points from the bench. He was actually trying to shape his thinking and trying to elicit information.
All right. Well, Adam, listen to this piece of sound that I want to play. It's a piece of sound from a Supreme Court argument that most people, even if they don't follow the court, they'll probably recognize what Souter's talking about.
There is no genuinely subjective indication beyond what can be viewed as either a dimple or a hanging chad. And there is a general rule being applied in a given county that an objective intent or an intent on an objective standard will be inferred. And that objective rule varies, we're told, from county to county.
All right, so a bit of legalese and sort of Supreme Court language there, but that's Bush v. Gore.
Right, and a couple things. One thing you'll notice there is that although that was complicated, that sentence, if you parsed it out grammatically, would work, which is not easy to do in that kind of context at that length. More importantly, that was probably the case that soured Justice Souter on the court, as Jeffrey Toobin reported in his very good book, The Nine. He took the court's decision in that very seriously and very negatively. Toobin reported that he still thinks about Bush v. Gore and cries about it. It was a real turning point for him. I think it was a shock that members of the court used arguments and doctrines to reach a result that might have suited them politically, but which they'd never adhered to before in other kinds of cases.
All right, so the obvious next step in this is naming a replacement, and we have to get into that because it's not like Washington doesn't have enough to do this summer with the climate change debates, healthcare, everything else that's going to be going on in the Senate. But before we get to that, real quickly, we have to talk about possible replacements. I mean, Souter, like you said, is generally a liberal. Everyone would expect President Obama to appoint someone who's probably ideologically similar, but what names are out there and what demographics of a replacement are we looking at?
And let me start by saying there are names out there, and I'm going to list them for you, but I don't think anybody really knows anything, and I'm not sure the White House has gone very far down this road. So people throw names around, but that doesn't mean that these are the only or best names in the mix. The conventional wisdom is that Obama is going to name a second woman to the court.
Mm-hmm.
So that narrows the demographics down immediately by half. The names you often hear are the new Solicitor General, Elena Kagan, until recently Dean of the Harvard Law School, and a couple of federal appeals court judges, Sonia Sotomayor in New York and Diane Wood in Chicago. But again, there's a kind of echo chamber effect to this, and I'm not sure I would take any of this to the bank, and I'm not sure that the White House has much started the process of winnowing down whom it wants to appoint.
Yeah, and again, it's not like they don't have enough to do. President Obama said in his news conference Wednesday night, we expected two things. We've got seven or eight, and I can't worry about immigration reform because I've got enough to do. Well, guess what? He's got even more to do now, doesn't he?
And what we've seen so far from his very limited appointments to the lower courts is that he is probably more in the mold of Clinton, who was appointing moderate liberals to the court, like Justices Ginsburg and Breyer. So you have a couple factors here. It's a liberal for liberal replacement. It won't change the fundamental dynamics of the court.
Right.
You have a president who may not be thinking about appointing a big liberal voice like Brennan or Marshall or Warren. And you have a Senate which is heavily dominated and may soon be filibuster-proof by Democrats.
Right.
So it might not be – it'll be a big moment, but it might not be as big a fight as we've seen in some previous years.
Maybe not as big of a fight as like a Bork or an Alito or even a Roberts. However, I cover the Senate, and everybody around there knows that judicial nominations, especially Supreme Court, whether you really oppose the nominee – because of the nominee or not, it is a wonderful opportunity to establish and reinforce your party ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And even more than that, a great opportunity to raise money because
right.
Especially on the Republican, on the conservative side and on the liberal side, too, they give a lot of money around supporting these nominees. So it could be pretty dynamic, right?
Right. And it also, and you know, from my perspective covering the court, it also is a rare moment where it focuses the nation's attention on an institution they don't always pay a lot of attention to, and starts a kind of national dialogue about what it is we want from the court and what it is we want from a justice, and that's not a bad thing either.
All right, well, I got to ask you about Arlen Specter real quick because he's been in the news this week. Obviously, he plans to switch his party affiliation from Republican to Democrat, former chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and has been right at the center of the Supreme Court fight since the beginning of his Senate career. Does the fact that he's switching mean anything in terms of that 60 number that you mentioned, or is he likely to be an independent voice on this?
It's a little hard to predict Specter at the best of times, and he's at this moment of change. I think, in a way, the more interesting question is who becomes the ranking Republican member and how does that change the dynamics of the questioning? Because Specter, say what you want about him, is a sophisticated lawyer and ran the last several confirmation hearing, ran the Roberts confirmation hearing, with real attention to interesting legal issues.
Adam, it's Daljit Dhaliwal here. Hello.
Yes.
Outside of the Beltway, how big a deal is Suit? I mean, do people really know who he is? Do they care outside of Washington, D.C.?
I think that the candid answer to that has to be no and no. People know a couple of Supreme Court justices. They know about Clarence Thomas and maybe Antonin Scalia, and they knew and loved Sandra Day O'Connor. But once you get past that list, the Supreme Court justices are not well known, and even if the name is recognized, people will be hard pressed to say much about that person.
Is it because he just doesn't stand out? I mean, compared to the others,
he doesn't make public appearances. He hasn't written a book. He's not interested in that kind of quasi-celebrity life. It's just not his style. At the same time, there's this caricature of him, which is quite inaccurate, that he's some kind of eccentric hermit, whereas he's a lovely man with lots of good friends who likes to enjoy ordinary, rich, intellectual life in a way that is completely at odds with official Washington.
All right, so real quickly, Adam, just before we get to the end, is it too early to know what cases are percolating in the circuits that will be a factor next year that the new justice and the Senate that names the new justice will probably be contending with?
Yeah, the short answer, it's not too early to tell what might be coming up, but what's in the pipeline these days doesn't look very interesting.
Oh, really? Short answer. Nothing, but something could get filed on detainees. Maybe Guantanamo is not quite settled, or is it?
There are a couple of cases out of the D.C. Circuit. One involving Guantanamo. One involving detainees held at Bagram. Those issues will continue to hit the court. But it does seem that The Obama administration is trying to find ways not to have fights over those issues in the Supreme Court, as we saw with the enemy combatant case, which they short-circuited rather than have the court decide.
All right. Adam Liptak, Supreme Court correspondent for The New York Times, talking about David Souter. Thanks for joining us. David Souter, widely reported, announced that he is leaving the court at the end of the term. We want to know. There's a new opening. Who would you name for the Supreme Court? Call us and let us know, 8778-MY-TAKE. Email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.